After finding a secure room, the companions dug in for the night, buttressing the doors with marble benches. Once settled in, dinner was cooked over a small fire built in a metal waste can and fed pamphlets and brochures from the tourist shop. When those were gone, they moved on to paper from the desks, and then the desks. Doc contentedly picked his teeth with a paperclip.
At least we don't have to burn the oil paintings in the executive office. It was an unwelcome experience to dine on 100-year-old military stew warmed by the million-dollar fire of a stack of burning masterpieces.
We saved the Gauguin and Edward Hopper, but we should have done the Jackson Pollocks. Never did like the abstract expressionists.
Agreed, madam. But the fumes from his depressing works would have only made the food sour.
Mopping his mess kit clean with a piece of bread from the MRE pack, Ryan idly listened to the old-timers' chat, and really could make no sense of it. Some of the artwork had been beautiful stuff, pastoral scenes of flowers. The rest were just splotches on canvas. Eye of the beholder, and all that. After dinner, Ryan and Christy took the first shift of walking a patrol of the building, while JB showed the others how to make pipe bombs from the plumbing supplies, mixed with items from a paint store and a garage. If there had been the time, the armorer could have made much more powerful gun cotton from the treasure in most banks. Take a big stack of money, a sack of silver quarters, say, and a high school chemistry lab, and in less than a week, he could produce fulminating gun cotton at a tremendous rate. The stuff was 10 times more powerful than dynamite, yet much easier to make. He and Ryan had tried reloading bullets with the stuff once, and even with a half charge mixed with common dirt, the blaster was blown apart. Since then, he never tried again, using the reloads found in the redoubts. They were infinitely safer. One at a time, each section of pipe was filled with a batch of cooked chems poured from a coffee pot, then the end cap screwed on tight and gently laid aside. While they cooled, the bombs were sensitive to shocks, but once cold, you could toss one down a flight of stairs and nothing would happen. Unless the fuse was lit, and then they detonated with staggering force, throwing out a deadly halo of shrapnel from the lead pipe. Doc, Jack, and Dean took over the production of the explos as Mildred and JB walked a patrol. Ryan and Christy found the private office of the curator with a comfortable sofa for sleeping and settled in for the rest of the night. Their next tour wasn't until just before dawn. The stars disappeared and the sky brightened as dawn rose in the east, but the pre-dark buildings stood in shadows until the sun crept over the rim of the crater and shone upon the burning city. Sleeping on a blanket near the dwindling campfire, Baron Gaza awoke at the infusion of light. The air was chilly, his breath fogging slightly, and the waves of heat from the crackling fire felt good on his face. Dimly, the man could sense something was wrong, but nothing about the area seemed awry. Food was cooking, although there were no frying pans in sight lying amid the burning wood. Kathleen was sitting in the open rear doors of the APC, a rapid fire across her lap. Della was inside the war wag, wrapped in blankets, and the others were lying nearby, naked limbs intertwined from the previous night's orgy of debauchery. With streaks of dried blood on her cheek, Denal lay curled into a ball, still trembling under the blankets. Gaza smiled briefly at the memory of the incident. His wives had done a superb job removing her tongue, the cauterized stump barely bleeding at all. It had been done so quickly. The combination of mutilation, pain, and pleasure did the trick as always. Denal now silently worshipped him like his other wives, although he would have the rest keep a close watch on her for a while. Sometimes there were slips, and he always hated having to slit a throat on the honeymoon. Rising from his nest of sweat-stained blankets, Gauza rose and stretched, luxuriating in the warm morning breeze. Limping over to the edge of the cliff, the man openly relieved himself while Allison stood close by with a long blaster cradled in her arms. She grunted as he finished, then waved a hand at the city below. The view was murky, and Gaza tried to force the sleep from his sight when cold adrenaline coursed through his powerful body and the man violently cursed.
Damn!
That wasn't the fog of sleep. It was smoke, billowing clouds of thick smoke with flickers of writhing flames deep within. He tried to wish it away as a bad dream, but as his eyes became adjusted to the growing light, he saw the ruins of some smaller buildings on the south side, charred timbers mixed with priceless debris, the perfect wags in the street reduced to smoldering wrecks.
Blood of my fathers, it's burning! All of it is burning!
Fearful for his safety, Allison grabbed his shoulder in a strong grip, and he shook her off.
It's burning!
He sprayed spittle into her startled face as he screamed.
My empire is on fire, and you let me sleep? You feeb slut!
Tears running down her face, Allison used both hands to try to explain she had only discovered the destruction moments before her husband. Watching the hand gestures, Gaza couldn't follow what she was saying and turned away before he struck the ignorant bitch again. The city was burning, the wealth of the pre-dark world vanishing before their very eyes. There was no time for recriminations or beatings. Every moment counted now.
Everybody up!
Gaza strode across the campsite to reclaim his clothing draped over the front prow of the APC.
Put everything back into the wag! We're going in to loot the ruins for blasters!
As he climbed into his clothes, his wives began to hurry about the area, picking up loose items and herding Denal into the vehicle. Shuffling over the uneven ground, the girl dropped her blanket, exposing her pale skin. Yanking on boots, Gaza paid no attention to the battered female, with more important matters on his mind. Who the nuke was this Ryan Carter to come out of the Deathlands like some whirlwind of destruction? First, Rock Point was destroyed by water, and now this nameless treasure trove by fire. It was like something from the fragging pre-dark Bible. What the hell was coming next, a plague of muti locust? As if in response to his thought, the fiery clouds in the sky rumbled ominously, making Gaza almost drop his gun belt. Trying to hide the fear in his stomach, the man forced trembling hands to buckle the holster around his waist, and he cleared his mind of foolish worries with the comforting routine of checking the big blasters. His personal hand cannons had been bought from that bitch Kate before she decided he was stockpiling too many blasters, as if there was such a thing as too many weapons. She just wanted to keep him weak, unable to leave the desert and expand his domain. But that was changing now, and soon he would have that blonde bitch under the knife. Not to make her a wife. Oh no. This time, it will be just for the sheer pleasure of bloody revenge. Going to the rear of the vehicle, Gaza checked the clutch and electric motor for the heavy winch. Designed to pull the wag from swampy ground, the cable was thick and strong. When Gaza had first obtained the vehicle, he had walked out the cable to its full length to learn exactly how long it was. He had used a knife to scratch the framework for every 10 paces, and now counted 10 such marks, roughly 100 feet. The sinkhole was about that deep, which meant there was no way he could anchor the cable and have the APC lower itself to the ground below. Damn. But he could lower down a couple of his wives to raid the ancient structures before the whole place was leveled by the flames. He screamed at the buildings, showing below the cliff.
Damn you, Carter! Damn you to hell!